Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. My name is indisputably Marcus Freestone, and this week's episode is called Identity Crisis. Since the invention of the printing press, humans have been bombarded with information on an unprecedented scale. Add to that radio, cinema, television, and now the web and digital technology, and our exhausted brains, which still think we are living in caves, are suffering from a chronic case of information overload. This causes us multifarious problems, some of which I've tackled in previous episodes, but another one is that of identity. Last week's podcast has made me think about the 21st century identity crisis and our sense of self, of who we are and our place within the world and wider human society. This is so important a factor, the foundation from which we relate to the external world and other people and institutions, even the physical environment, that I think it bears further examination. In previous times, everyone very much knew their place. You were born with a social status, and it stuck with you for life. I'm not by any means saying that that was a good or fair system, because it clearly wasn't. But the fact that in Western countries at least, this notion has now largely vanished has, I believe, produced a widespread sense of a lack of personal identity. People now identify with external things rather than their own status or character traits. They wear t-shirts with their favourite bands. They blog or tweet about TV shows or politics, and this is their only sense of identity. I am equally culpable of this fallacious behaviour. As I said last week, I identify myself above all as a novelist, and thus have failed to develop many other areas of my life and character. It seems to be an increasing problem that many people have an external locus of control. If you have an internal locus of control, then you believe that you are in charge of your own life, that you make decisions, you carry out actions within the external world, and that things will by and large go the way that you want them to. If you have, on the other hand, an external locus of control, you believe that you are buffeted around by external circumstances and other people, and that you are not really in charge of your own life, and that your decisions and plans do not usually come to pass. Now, as with everything else to do with human thought and behaviour, this is a spectrum. Nobody is either 100% external or internal in terms of their locus of control, but it is obviously better to be far more towards the internal than the external, or you'll have a pretty dreadful life. With the important caveat that if one is too far towards an internal locus of control, then you could become narcissistic or a megalomaniac. But in general, having a strongly external locus of control is bad for your mental health and general well-being and the course of your life in general. Existentialists, especially Sartre, would describe an external locus of identity as deeply inauthentic. By identifying with things outside of ourselves, we are being dishonest, both with ourselves and other people. This is living in what Sartre called bad faith, though I can see how tempting it is to fall into this trap, because I constantly do it myself. It is often hard to know what one's own identity is, especially if you pay close attention to how you are described by other people. Others can only judge you on your external appearance, behavior, and conversation, not on your internal sense of self or the true content of your thought and character. So they can only ever form a distorted, superficial impression of you, one that is filtered through and modified by their own biases, prejudices, and insecurities. And everyone you meet will judge you in a different manner. So it's hardly surprising that it is hard to know who you really are. Are other people's views of you more or less accurate than your own? Is there an empirical barometer one can use to ascertain one's true identity? On the deeper level of the content of your consciousness, it is impossible to measure or assess that, because others do not have access to your consciousness, and you cannot step outside of it in order to accurately judge it. So self-knowledge is always going to be illusory to a large degree. It is sometimes said that a person should be judged on their actions, but how can anybody know what truly motivated those actions, either the person who is acting or the person observing those actions? And here I would like to read a small passage from a 1922 lecture by Gurdjieff. And if you've listened to the podcast before, you will know that I'm a big fan of his ideas. And this is him talking about the problems of identity. Man is a plural being. When we speak of ourselves ordinarily, we speak of I. We say, I did this. I think this. I want to do this. But this is a mistake. There is no such I. Or rather, there are hundreds, thousands of little eyes in every one of us. We are divided in ourselves, but we cannot recognize the plurality of our being except by observation and study. At one moment, it is one I that acts. At the next moment, it is another I. It is because the eyes in ourselves are contradictory that we do not function harmoniously. We live ordinarily with only a very minute part of our functions and our strength because we do not recognize that we are machines and we do not know the nature and working of our mechanism. We are machines. We are governed entirely by external circumstances. All our actions follow the line of least resistance to the pressure of outside circumstances. Try for yourselves. Can you govern your emotions? No. You may try to suppress them or cast out one emotion by another emotion, but you cannot control it. It controls you. Or you may decide to do something. Your intellectual I may make such a decision. But when the time comes to do it, you may find yourself doing just the opposite. Now, that may sound to many people an unnecessarily pessimistic view of human nature, and Gurdjieff was all about solutions to that, which I've outlined in previous episodes, but I think we'd all have to admit that to a greater or lesser extent, we are all buffeted around by external circumstances, and we don't always exercise our free will. Okay, so before we talk more about this identity crisis, let's first examine the nature of identity itself. And before seeing what existentialism and other philosophies have to say on the subject, we'll explore some psychological and clinical definitions of identity. The first thing is to distinguish between personal and group identity. We are all part of many groups, both voluntary and mandatory, and all groups have a hierarchy, whether explicit or unspoken. So our place within all the groups that we identify as belonging to, neighbourhood, friends, family, school, work, pastimes, etc., inevitably become a part of our personal identity. In clinical terms, we internalize the group as part of the self. No man is an island, said John Donne in the famous poem. It is impossible, especially so nowadays, to separate oneself from wider society, from the hyperconnectivity that humanity has become. Therefore, our sense of self cannot help but contain our sense of our relationship to the rest of the world, as well as our place within the hierarchy of our various groups. And our personal and group identities are constantly feeding off and influencing each other, so that for all practical purposes, they are inextricably linked, despite how clinicians or philosophers may focus on categorical distinctions. How can your sense of self be separate from your social interactions? I would say that they absolutely cannot in any real experiential sense. Indeed, some research indicates that we develop a sense of ourselves in a social context before we develop a strong sense of personal identity. And this makes sense to me because surely as infants, we learn to interact with and try to control the external world and other people before we think about who we really are as a person. In fact, social science research clearly indicates that our self-esteem, resilience to setbacks, and our sense of purpose and meaning all come from our social identity and interactions rather than our personal internal sense of self. All these factors are vital in maintaining a good level of mental health, and so it can be clearly seen that our social lives have a major impact on both our sense of self and our mental well-being. Therefore, isolating yourself from people is bad for your mental health, as I can personally attest and have done so a few times in previous episodes. Some people identify themselves with the content of their intellect. This is as erroneous as identifying yourself with your physical appearance or your clothes or material belongings. Nothing in isolation constitutes your identity. It is a totality. Sartre personified this sense of inauthenticity with his story of the waiter. In his groundbreaking 1943 tome, and indeed it is a tome because it's a massive book, Being and Nothingness, building on the work of his mentor Edmund Husserl, Sartre contrasted being in itself, the phenomenology of objects in the external world, with being for others, the behaviour of the waiter. By identifying himself as a waiter, the man is being inauthentic, because he is ascribing to himself material properties such as those possessed by an object such as a table. For Sartre, being a waiter, or indeed a novelist, or the clothes you wear, or the house you live in, are not inherent properties of you. They are not part of your identity. Rather, they are a form of behaviour you are choosing to act out. I contend that we all do this all the time, and that this confusion of behaviour with identity is the cause of great cognitive dissonance and is therefore at the root of much of our mental anguish and confusion. Behaviour is transient and ephemeral. It may be how other people choose to judge us, but it is not our identity. Because of this, we cannot ultimately be held responsible for how others judge us, Although obviously we have a heavy influence over that because we choose how to behave and present ourselves to the external world. When we grow up, we receive constant messages from our parents and school and general environment about who we are, and these go a long way to form our identity. Jordan Peterson, the evolutionary psychologist and psychotherapist, mentions the existential idea that being lied to or deceived is one of the most harmful things that a human being can experience. And he says that he has seen this often in his practice as a clinical psychologist. It therefore follows that being lied to in early childhood is profoundly damaging, and no parents are ever or probably can ever be 100% honest with their children. If they lied about Father Christmas and the Tooth Fairy, then how can we believe what they say about God or morality or anything else for that matter? I believe that my parents gave me an unrealistic and negative view of the world and myself, and I still struggle with the ramifications of that negativity 40 years later, although as Sartre would doubtless point out, I cannot fall into the Freudian excuse of blaming my upbringing for the current state of my life. Sartre thought that we were constantly telling ourselves stories about our lives, constantly constructing an autobiographical narrative and trying to impose a coherent and ordered structure on our lives. In that light, he contended that we can never truly know ourselves. We can never construct an accurate autobiography of ourselves, presumably because we are viewing ourselves from the inside. You cannot examine a consciousness using that consciousness because the observation itself becomes part of the consciousness, and the act of observation changes that consciousness, as does the awareness of the act of observation, and so on. He also said that we remake ourselves every day, that we are changed fundamentally by everything we experience, and this necessarily means that identity is constantly morphing and developing. He made a major distinction between thoughts and actions and stated that we should be identified and defined by our actions rather than our thoughts, that thought without a corresponding action is impotent and transient. So if we take this existential approach, then we are forced to conclude that our identity comes from what we do in the world rather than our internal mental life. And this is, as I've just said, agreed with by developmental psychology and most clinicians. But we can see that this produces an inherent contradiction, that we feel that our sense of identity is within us, when really it is out there in the world. Given that our identity is formed largely from our social interactions, I think it is apt to return to the world of psychology and take a brief look at child development. Jordan Peterson points out that infants learn by not so much copying their parents as forming an archetype consisting of the totality of their observations. And in a lecture of his I watched on YouTube recently, and I thoroughly recommend all his lectures, he used the example of an infant girl playing with dolls and developing her character by playing in that way. And he pointed out that, of course, she's not directly imitating her mother in that instance, because she has never seen her mother playing with dolls. What she's doing is working out what it means to be an adult woman by forming an archetype of the totality of all her observations of adult women, principally her mother, and then acting them out and figuring out what works and what doesn't. And this made me think about my own childhood, because I never lived with my father and I hardly saw him till I was four, and I didn't have any other siblings. So my only male role model was my grandfather, who was 60 when I was born. And I think that explains why, as my girlfriend likes to frequently point out, that I am very old-fashioned in some of my opinions. And I think that's undoubtedly true. And my grandfather read lots of books. He played the piano. He was really into music and comedy and recording technology. And I've basically imitated all of that. And my hobbies essentially are those of my grandfather, of someone 60 years older than me. So maybe that's why I've got a bee in my bonnet about analog versus digital technology, but let's not go there. We learn what our identity is by interacting with the world, learning what we can and can't do, and modifying our persona as we go. Jordan Peterson also mentions Piaget, the pioneering developmental psychologist, and his work delineating how children learn social skills by playing games with other children and learning the social rules inherent in those games and constructing the rules of morality and adult society from those games. And I didn't play with other children and was an only child, as I said, and I just found children's games boring and pointless. And by the time I was four, I could read, and so I just shut myself in my room and read books on my own. And I never learnt from these simulations of the adult world, and consequently I now, as a 45-year-old, have very little sense of what it means to be part of a family, because I never was part of a nuclear family with two parents, or indeed wider society in general, which is why I've become a novelist, musician, podcaster, and general misfit. So there's a lesson for all of you, especially if you have young children, or indeed are one. But if you are one, then why would you be listening to this podcast? Then again, I once saw a two-year-old using an Apple Mac, so I suppose anything's possible, really. In fact, this is completely off the topic, but it's come into my head anyway, and why not? We could use an amusing interlude from all the heavy philosophical stuff. One of my friends told me that when his son was about three, he was in the living room and his son was in the other room, and suddenly he heard this incredibly loud noise, and he went in to see what it was, and his son had switched on the computer, gone on YouTube, and was watching a trailer for the Incredible Hulk film. And he said to him, "I didn't know you knew how to switch a computer on." And he went, "Yeah, of course I do. I'm three." He didn't say that, but you know. But then, you know, and my friend said, "Well, how did you get on YouTube?" And he said, "Oh, I've seen Mum do it. You just click on that there, and then you're on YouTube, and you put in what you want to watch." And I thought, of all the things he could have typed into YouTube or Google at the age of three, and what he could have been confronted with. It's a good job that he was just interested in the Incredible Hulk. So, in conclusion, we can see that identity is both multifarious in its nature and also highly fluid. If we combine the existential and psychological approaches, we can say that personal identity is largely a result of our interactions with other people and our actions within the external world and society. But of course, how we interact with other people, how we interpret and feel about those interactions, and how we act in the wider world It's all down to our personal choices that we make every single day. In other words, our free will. So although personal identity is largely taken from the external world, it is up to us to choose what we take from the external world and other people, and therefore how we shape our identity. Ultimately, no matter what others think of us, how we feel about ourselves is our choice, a facet of the exertion of our free will. And as my recent use of the word conclusion would hopefully indicate, that indeed is the conclusion of episode 19 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. This is the second time I've recorded this episode due to a gargantuan technical cock-up, and I'm hoping that the way I have the recording set up now, you can't hear what I can hear in the background, which is that on the 29th of October, there are a rather large amount of fireworks going on all around me, as it's 2 days to Halloween and 7 days to Bonfire Night, and where I live, for some reason, people feel the need to celebrate this random day by letting off tons of bloody fireworks. So I hope you can't hear that. And if there is anything technically wrong with this broadcast, then you can blame that. And I've just showed the fact that I formed my identity on someone 60 years older than me by using the word broadcast to describe a podcast, although it is actually the etymological root of the word. I believe podcast was originally a broadcast that one listened to on one's iPod. I've never had an iPod or any other Apple product, but that's nothing to do with positive thinking, the meaning of life. So next week's episode is about another listener question I've had, which was, is depression on the increase? And is Western 21st century living causing us greater distress and affecting our mental health? So that's what I'm going to be talking about in episode 20 next week. If you have any contributions to make to that or any further questions you want to ask on that subject, then please let me know. There is, as I speak, still no comment box on the website, as I've been promising for the last couple of weeks, because the bloody CSS code still will not cooperate. But there is a new addition there, as well as the regular PayPal donation buttons, where you can chuck me a few quid, stroke dollars, stroke insert currency of your choice. To encourage me to do this every week and support the podcast and allow me to, you know, buy some food occasionally, then please do so. There's also another PayPal option now on marcusfreestone.com/positive thinking and the meaning of life, which is where this resides. And the further PayPal option is that you can subscribe for a small amount every week, and every week you will personally receive from my very own fingers and mouth and microphone by email an extra audio piece of content, a little bonus mini podcast that extrapolates upon the themes of the main podcast, which is that which you are now listening to. So if you would like to do that, that would be very welcome. And if you like the podcast, then please continue to share it on Facebook and Twitter and Googleplex and all the other places. And if you are one of those rare people who occasionally put your phone down and interact with someone face to face, then please also tell them about the podcast. And please continue to email me, marcus.freestone@yahoo.com, or contact me via Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life on Facebook to send me questions for further episodes, because as much as it may seem to be the opposite, I really am tired of banging on about my own life and my own problems, so I would like to talk about much wider subjects. So anything at all to do with positive thinking, negative thinking, with psychology, philosophy, mental health, Gurdjieff, Ouspensky, anything you like, Nietzsche, just send me a message, and you can have your very own episode of a podcast. So I hope that this works now and that you will be hearing this, because I really don't want to recall this a third time. So hopefully you will now hear the closing theme tune music fading in and my voice fading out as I continue speaking, but really that is the podcast over. Thanks for listening. See you again next week in the sense of you hearing my voice. Bye-sy-bye.